cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab some borax, and enjoy this episode of Dark Fantasy, entitled The Man with the Scarlet Satchel.
Fantasy.
I would like to buy a satchel, if you please. There, that one in the corner will do. The scarlet one. You see, scarlet is my favorite color because it reminds me so very much of blood.
You know what I came about, Sam?
Sit down.
Do you have a smoke?
Yes, of course.
Do you think Mr. Craig knows what we're doing?
I believe he suspects.
What are your plans?
Tonight, Peter Craig will sign over the last of the estate to me.
And when do I get the money you promised me?
Within a week.
Why that wait that long?
Because it's the best that way. You should wait longer. Would not do for the private nurse, Rose Esther, to become suddenly rich overnight.
You remember the price, don't you?
$100,000.
I should have more. You're netting a cool million.
The deal was all right with you when I made it.
Yes. Yes, it's all right. What time tonight?
About 11. When he's good and sleepy. So he'll take the powder without suspecting.
You said he already suspects.
Not everything. He doesn't know we give him dope to make his mind go blank. We can be pretty sure of that.
Or that he signs those legal papers while under the influence of the drug?
He couldn't possibly know that. He's been taking medicine for so many years, when you hold a glass of it in front of him, he takes it automatically.
He has one more paper to sign?
One more.
I'll give him the powder the minute you come into the house tonight.
After that, disappear.
Yes, I will. But remember, Sam, I expect my share of the money within a week. I think I've been quite patient with you since we went into this thing. It wouldn't be wise for me to become suddenly impatient.
All right, Mr. Millen. Sit down, sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Craig.
Nurse, hand me my glasses on that table over there. I can't see a thing without my glasses.
Your medicine, Mr. Craig.
Eh? Medicine. Oh. Oh, all right. Thank you, nurse. Now, you get my glasses.
Here they are. Do you wish warm milk before going to bed tonight?
Warm milk? No, no, not on your life. And don't you go locking my laboratory tonight. I'm going to tinker around in there a bit as soon as Mr. Willard leaves.
Yes, sir. Just ring if you need anything, Mr. Craig.
You look well, sir.
I never felt better in my life. Now, what's on your mind at this hour of the night?
Well, Mr. Craig, I've been handling your legal affairs for quite some time now.
Yes, you have. 7 years, I believe.
Yes, so. This afternoon I stumbled upon something that absolutely astounded me.
And what was that?
I happened upon the deed to your estate. I noticed it had never been turned over to you in a legal manner. Well, it's a small technicality, but I thought I should advise you about it.
Have you done anything about it?
Why, yes, I have. That's why I came out tonight. I have the papers with me. Put everything in perfect order. I say, Mr. Craig, something wrong?
No. No, I'm just sleepy. I better sign the paper now.
Yes, sir. I think you'd better. Here, Mr. Craig. On this line right here.
Yes, it's here?
That's right. That's all, Mr. Craig. Thank you very much. This is just exactly what we needed. Just exactly.
Nest! Oh, no. There ain't no better than to leave me here in darkness. Nurse. Nurse, come here. Come here at once. She's not here. She's gone. She's gone. And left me. When it's so dark. So still. Left me here to die. No, I can't stand darkness. No, I can't be left alone. My heart.
To my manservant, Alex Monroe, I bequeath the sum of $5,000. This is my will. All that remains, aside from the foregoing, is for Mr. Samuel Willard, my attorney, to carry out the duties I already have outlined to him. Herewith, attest my hand. Peter Craig. And that is Mr. Craig's will. I wish to assure you that the last portion, the portion concerning the duties involving myself, have been carried out. They have to do with the funeral itself and the preparations for the funeral. I wish to thank each of you for coming here tonight to hear the reading of Mr. Craig's will. You will each receive your individual shares of the estate within the next 2 weeks. Now, good evening. Well, Rose?
They took it quite well.
Why shouldn't they? After all, they were only his servants. He had no relatives. It didn't strike any of them as strange that Craig should have left the bulk of the estate to me.
You played your cards very well, didn't you?
Yeah, I think so. The smartest thing was giving the servants a share.
Yes. Now, I suppose I'll receive my share.
Of course. Within a week.
Good. Would you mind answering a question for me?
Why, no. What is it?
Those instructions about the funeral. I saw nothing unusual about them.
There wasn't anything unusual.
But just what were these secret instructions Mr. Craig left for you in a sealed envelope marked to be read immediately following my passing?
Oh, that. He just stated he wished to be buried in the family vault. But there was something strange at that.
Yes?
He directed me to his laboratory, a certain compartment where I found a box wrapped in brown paper and tied with a heavy cord. He instructed that this box was to be buried with him.
And was it?
Yes, I had it placed in a coffin.
Do you know what was in the box?
Yes. I don't mind saying I was curious, so I opened the package.
Well?
It wasn't anything worthwhile at all. Just a couple of pounds of modeling clay.
Modeling clay?
Yes. What in the world do you think his idea was in wanting to be buried with such an insignificant thing as modeling clay. This way, please, Professor White.
Thanks, Mr. Willard. Peter Craig, as I've told you, was an old friend of mine. I certainly was surprised to arrive here and learn he'd passed on.
Yes, we buried him last Thursday. Mr. Craig had no relatives. I didn't know the names of any of his friends, and that's why you weren't notified.
I once worked with Mr. Craig at Oxford. He could have been a professor there, had he wished.
Professor? Mm-mm. Here, down these steps.
Yes, he was quite an electrical engineer. Worked miracles, almost, with wires and tubes and batteries, condensers, all that sort of thing.
Well, I knew he liked to fuss around in his laboratory. I've only been inside the place once. Didn't know he was a master at any particular science.
Oh, yes, indeed. He was one in a million. Always experimenting. Always trying some new idea.
Here we are. This is Mr. Craig's laboratory.
I see. This wax on the door.
Oh, that. The police sealed the place up when they were investigating the death of Peter Craig.
Investigating?
Yes. Mr. Craig died unattended. Heart attack. He fell and struck his head. At first, the police feared foul play.
Oh, I see. Oh, I suppose it'll be quite all right to break the seal now.
Oh, certainly. We've forgotten all about it. There we are. Now, I'll go first, Professor White. Light switch is very inconveniently placed. Okay, sir. This is what you wanted to see.
Yes, sir. Just as I thought. Table after table and shelf after shelf of electrical equipment.
Seems pretty much of a mess to me.
Poor old Peter Craig. He never was very tidy.
I came in here the day the police were around, just before they sealed the room up. I'd never been here before. All these wires and electrical panels and tubes and things give me the creeps.
Well, Craig certainly could put weird contraptions together.
He spent many hours here. I believe his experiments were the only things that gave him the desire to keep on living.
Say, here's a strange-looking workbench over here.
What do you mean, Professor?
Well, look for yourself here. See, the tabletop is littered with short lengths of almost invisible copper wires and with little bits of fresh putty.
Putty?
No, it's not putty. It's modeling clay.
You... Yes. You're right.
Yes, and here's a cardboard box of the stuff.
That box, the brown paper, this heavy cord.
Yeah, why, it appears that there was a great deal more of the clay in this box. You can see that a good portion of it has been torn away from the original mass.
It's the same box, the very same one I put into the casket.
What?
What could Peter Craig have been doing with modeling clay and thin copper wires?
Mr. Willard.
Yes?
Is that the only entrance to this laboratory, the one the police sealed?
Well, yes, it is. No windows, no other door.
And yet that seal was unbroken.
We both saw it was.
Yeah, but look here on this workbench here. These bits of clay, still moist, not dry and hardened like they'd be if they'd lain here long.
And this hand towel here, look at it. Damp, as though someone had just recently dried his hands on it.
Mr. Willard! What's this? Do you know?
A locket on a golden chain. Where did you find it?
Oh, here on the floor, near the wall over there.
His picture is a child inside.
You know what's in the locket without opening it?
Yes. It was Peter Craig's request that he be buried with this locket in his hands.
Hello? Yes. Yes, this is Rose Esther. Who wishes to see me, clerk? Well, if he won't give his name, I certainly am not interested. He said to tell me he's the man with the scarlet satchel. The scarlet satchel. Oh. No, I don't wish to see him. Send him away, please. Tell him to go away. Tell him to go away. Peter Craig.
Good evening, my dear.
You, the man with...
With the scarlet satchel.
I remember when you bought it. You took me with you. And when I suggested a black or brown colored bag, you said...
I said that scarlet is my favorite color because it reminds me so very much of blood.
Yes. Oh, no. No. This isn't true. It can't be true. Peter Craig is dead.
Yes, my dear. So he is.
But you were Peter Craig.
I was Peter Craig. Once upon a time. Now, I am merely an old man with a scarlet satchel.
What is in that satchel?
I am just returning a gift, my dear.
A gift?
Oh, it was a most excellent jest, I know. But hardly becoming of so charming a person as yourself.
What do you mean?
Do you remember the modeling clay? I see you do remember.
It was merely a joke. We sent it to you only in fun.
We?
Mr. Willard and I.
Oh, yes. Mr. Willard. Well, I never did tell you how much I appreciated receiving a child's plaything from two such thoughtful people. But now I've come to return the gift.
Go away. You're some imposter, pretending to be Peter Craig. The real Peter Craig is dead and buried.
I am going, my dear. But I leave the gift with you. You'll find it there in the satchel. You'll find its contents most interesting, I'm sure. And now, good night, my dear, and goodbye.
He's gone. It isn't true. Peter Craig is dead. I saw him buried. Oh, this is just a horrible dream. Yes, I'll wake up any minute now and... That satchel. Scarlet. More scarlet now than it ever was. There on the floor where he left it. It's opening. Yes. Opening. And yet, there are no hands to do it. Something inside. Something is opening that satchel from the inside. What in the name of heaven is that thing? Oh, no. Stop. Stop, I tell you. Keep away. Keep away from me. No! No! No!
Miss Esther was a friend of yours, Mr. Willard?
Yes, she was.
And that newspaper certainly gives a startling account of her death.
Yes. Rose Esther was heard by neighboring tenants screaming hysterically. When investigators broke their way through her locked door, they found the nurse sprawled upon the floor of her living room. Both the girl's hands were clasped tightly to her face. Her eyes were staring blankly, wide with terror. Her last gasping words were, "Scarlet Satchel." The terror-stricken girl undoubtedly died from fright. Scarlet Satchel.
Yeah, sounds like a murder plot from Sherlock Holmes.
Scarlet Satchel. Just a minute, Professor.
Mr. Willard, man, don't jump like that. Why, you startled the life out of me.
It's gone.
Gone? What's gone?
He kept it here in this closet. I remember when he bought it.
Who bought what, Mr. Willard? What in heaven's name are you so excited about?
The Scarlet Satchel. He always kept it here. Now it's gone.
I still don't understand what connects...
The cemetery. That's it. We've got to go out to the cemetery. Come on, Professor White. We've got to go out there and see what's happened to the grave of Peter Craig. His body's gone.
Peter Craig's vault has been opened.
Opened? As though someone inside had pushed up the coffin lid to escape.
That lid was heavy.
Peter!
Peter Craig!
It was so difficult for an old man to push up so much weight.
But Peter, what on earth is the explanation of this? They told me you were dead and buried, man.
Then for once, my good friend, they told the truth.
Yes. He is dead. I saw him just after they found him. He'd been dead for hours. His heart had stopped. Rigor mortis had set in.
Yes. I was a perfect corpse.
Peter!
He was taken to the funeral parlor. Embalmed. He lay in his coffin a day and a night before we buried him.
Mr. Willard, there's some explanation.
I saw them close the coffin on him. Saw them bring it out here. Watched them put it into the vault and seal the door.
And Rose Esther witnessed the same thing. That's why I startled her so.
You killed her? You killed Rose Esther?
No, not I. She was killed by the thing in the Scarlet Satchel.
The Scarlet Satchel? Professor White, look, he's carrying it now.
There is one plan in the entire scheme of things mortal man does not know. That those who are murdered never rest easily within their graves until they have wrought a full and perfect vengeance.
Murder?
They left me alone, alone in the darkness and stillness of a night to die. They knew that my heart couldn't stand the shock. It was as much murder as if they'd stopped my heart with a dagger thrust.
No. No, no, I had nothing to do with that.
You and your friend, Miss Esther, once thought it very hilarious when you sent me a child's plaything through the mails. At the time, I was not amused, Mr. Willard. Now I am.
The clay modeling set.
Exactly.
Peter. Peter, man, what are you doing?
The Scarlet Satchel. He's opening it.
I'm taking out my little pygmy friend.
Peter, that thing looks alive.
No, no. Oh, it can't be. It's nothing but a little figure modeled in clay. Just a little clay doll. It can't be human.
Then watch it come to life.
Peter. Good heavens.
It's moving. Walking like a man.
You see? I have put the modeling clay to good use. I have created with it your damnation.
No. No. Keep it away from me. Don't let it come any closer. Keep it away, I say. Don't let it touch me. Stop it. Keep that deadly thing away from me! Don't let it touch me! I can't stand it!
I've heard The Man with the Scarlet Satchel, the 16th original tale of dark fantasy by Scott Bishop. Ben Morris played Sam Willard, Fred Wayne was Peter Craig, Georgiana Cook took the part of Rose Esther, and Muir Height was heard as Professor White. Next Friday night at this time, listen to another startling and weird dark fantasy adventure. Superstition Be Hanged, written by Scott Bishop. Tom Paxton speaking. Dark Fantasy originates each Friday night in the studios of WKY, Oklahoma City. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Okay, Shapey. Reach in and adjust yourself. We will wait. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of Rocky Fortune, entitled Murder Among the Statues.
Now, Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. NBC presents Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
I guess I've had some strange jobs in my time. Once I was a shill for a guess your weight guy in a carnival. I'd come up there looking like a rube, and he'd guess my weight at 200 even. Everybody in the crowd gives him the old ha-ha. However, they don't know I got the lead in my pants. About 50 pounds in my two hip pockets. You never really know when you start in just how a job's gonna turn out. Sometimes the one that looked like the tamest turn out to be the loaded. Like the time I'm sent by the agency to play parlor maid to a gang of plaster Paris statues. The sign on the front of the window said Oliver Bates, Objet d'Art. It looks like I've intruded on ladies' night in an uninhibited Turkish bath. Most of the plaster statues are dames, and most of the dames would be arrested on the spot if they ever set foot on Jones Beach at daylight. Pretty soon, an oily little guy slides out under the door from the back room and oozes up to me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, what can I do for you? A reproduction for your library? A nymph? A satyr? Some faun?
Sure, any time. What do you got in mind?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, it's all right. You Oliver Bates?
Yes.
Well, the agency sent me over. They said you needed a handyman.
Oh, of course. Do you know anything about dusting statuary?
What is there to know about dusting it?
Well, the statues aren't intrinsically valuable, of course, but still, we must be careful. Aren't they beautiful?
Hmm. What happened to this one? She bite her nails?
That is the Venus de Milo.
Oh. Well, when do I start?
Right away. I'll expect you to keep all the statues dusted, the floor swept, and the windows cleaned.
Tell me, Mr. Bates, what is all this stuff? Looks like Dream Night in a DT ward.
My dear fellow, these are some of the finest statuary reproductions available. For example, this is a gargoyle from Notre Dame.
Oh, I remember this cat. He used to play fullback. Sam Gargoyle.
And this is the Aztec god Paliago Chilia Chilia.
Gesundheit.
Of course, you know you spend the nights here.
They told me, but I didn't bargain for this collection of gremlins. Is this stuff the genuine McCoy?
Of course not. They're plaster reproductions. Take this one, the Hag at Bay. The original stands in the Palazzo del Marco in Florence. Isn't she lovely?
Yeah, she reminds me of the old broad that sells the pretzels on 48th Street. She's got cobwebs on her nose.
Look out. Be careful.
Just busting her off a little bit. Ticklish, honey?
Look out, you fool. It's falling.
I got it.
You fool, you idiot. Look what you've done.
Her arm comes off, that's all.
Get away from there. Don't touch it.
Maybe I could glue it back on.
No. Go away. Get out of here.
How much does it cost? You can take it out of my salary.
Don't touch it.
Look, Mr. Bates, what's it worth?
What's it worth? Oh, well, I suppose it really can be mended. I'll just carry it back to the shelf after this. Be careful.
Okay. Hey, Gargoyle. How do you think he'll do against Southern Cal? It turns out that Bates is running strictly a schlock house. He imports these plaster dummies from Italy for a couple of hundred lira apiece, which in American money ain't worth counting. He sells them over here to art lovers for 25 clams, which is a markup would have Macy's tail talking to Gimbals. I put in a couple of hours talking football with a gargoyle when a car squeals to a stop in front of the store. One of those foreign jobs, about 3.5 blocks long with a chauffeur out in the cold. An old geezer in a Scotch plaid shawl crawls out of the back and totters in. He's leaning on a silver-headed cane and a blonde-headed dish with a pair of legs that weren't off a piano.
Bates! Bates! Where is he? Bates!
Now don't excite yourself, Mr. Spool. Remember the doctor.
Oh, that doctor's an idiot. Bates! You!
Yeah?
Oh, you're not Bates.
I'm Rocky Fortune.
Rocky, I don't want you. Bates!
Yes, Spool. I was in the back. I didn't hear you. Fortune, get Mr. Spool a chair.
I don't want a chair. I want to talk about...
Mr. Spool, perhaps we'd better go inside.
Now, here. I drove all the way from Westchester to this miserable little shop, and I won't be put off.
Of course, Mr. Spool, we can talk in my private office this way.
Oh, yes, of course. Sharon, wait here for me.
Yes, Mr. Spool.
He's a peppery old buzzard, ain't he?
Mm-hmm. That old buzzard is Jonathan J. Spool.
Oh, you mean he's the old nut with the copper money, huh?
He has $8 million invested in copper, yes.
That's a lot of copper. You work for him?
I'm his secretary.
Must be nice to have $8 million in copper.
You work for Mr. Bates?
Yeah.
Must be very interesting work.
It's a living.
Can you tell me about the statue?
Sure. What do you want to know?
Well, are they all plastered?
All except Gargoyle. He's in training.
Oh, very funny. You really know about them?
Sure. Bates couldn't get along without me. Look, when you've tucked the old man in for his afternoon nap, why don't you come on back and I'll tell you all about him?
I'm sorry. I'll be busy with Mr. Spruill's collection all day.
What's he collect? Bottle caps?
Mr. Spruill is probably the world's foremost private collector of antique artifacts.
Is that a fact?
Well, he has the only complete set of early Greek amphorae with lids.
What's amphorae?
Vases. Delicate ceramic vases.
And he's got the lids?
That's right.
Sweetie, you can call them amphorae, Liz. I call them bottle caps. About this time, Bates pours himself out of his office and sends me out for supper. I'm not particularly anxious to go because the counterman at the one-arm joint around the corner has his shirt buttoned two buttons lower than Sharon, but the effect is not the same. I inhale a bowl of chili and a piece of rubber meringue pie and head back to the store. There's nobody in front of the store, so I walk through to the back, tipping my hat to the hag at bay as I pass, and I open the office door. Good, you're still here. I was afraid you'd... Hey, what's Bates doing on the floor? Mr. Bates! Mr. Bates!
He's dead.
You ain't kidding, lady. Somebody blew out the back of his head, and it took a big gun to do that.
A gun?
Yeah, maybe a .45 automatic, something like the one you're holding in your hand. Maybe you better give it to me right now.
But...
Now you better tell Rocky all about it.
Well, I didn't do it.
Look, Sharon, I find you standing over a stiff with a real hot rod.
Oh, you gotta believe me. I found him this way. Mr. Spruill left his shawl. He sent me back for it, and I walked in, and I...
Don't tell me that you picked the gun up off the floor.
I don't know why. I...
Hey, you're real scared, aren't you?
It was awful. I touched him. My hand...
All right. Slow down. Did you see anybody when you came in?
No. Yes, wait a minute. There's a black car halfway down the block, and it drove off just as I came in.
Maybe it was a heist. Let's see. Bates kept his roll in his pocket. It's gone, all right. He must have had a couple of hundred in there. Hey.
What is it?
An insurance policy on his last shipment. Well, the shipment is safe. Bates should have made the policy straight life, I guess.
What's that?
Snow White and the two dopes.
What?
A patrol car. Somebody must have heard the shot.
What'll I do? They won't believe me.
Look, we're both in a spot. Camping out over a corpse is not popular with the lads in blue. Sharon, this whole deal is fishy in the Fulton Street Market on Friday morning. Come on.
Where are you going?
Out the back.
But the police will think that I...
If we stay here, they won't have to think. They'll pin it on you like a gardenia. Come on.
Mr.
a Comanche sneak out the back door while the cops waste the taxpayers' rubber squealing to a stop in front. We beat it down an alley and around the corner onto the street. By the time we slow down to a walk, Sharon's out of air, breathing heavy, which on her looks good.
What do we do now?
That's a good question. There are a couple of leads I got in mind.
Leads?
That Bates was as phony as a showgirl's eyelash.
Why do you say that?
A couple of reasons. For one thing, what would a two-bit operation like that need a night watchman for? He never had one up until the time he hired me. For another thing, that insurance policy. It was for 50 grand.
Hunter, what does that mean?
He had something in that store beside dying swans.
But what?
That's what I'd like to know. Look, let's move.
You ain't going nowhere, what?
If that's your finger, pal, you got stuck in my back, your nails need cutting.
That ain't no finger, Buster. That's a 6-inch knife. You can cut a hair with it, lengthwise. Okay, Mr. Bensing, I got him.
Good work, Butler.
What's the idea of this?
Shut up.
Look out for the knife. You'll damage the herringbone.
One more part of you, I'll damage the backbone.
All right, Butler. I'm sure they'll cooperate.
In a pig's eye. What do you want?
Well, you see, I have my car, and I thought I might drop you somewhere.
No, thanks. It's a nice night. I'll walk.
Ain't that a car, white guy?
All right, all right.
Would you prefer the back or the jump seat, miss?
Doesn't make any difference.
Well, I'd like
get
to
in
sit
there,
up.
Yo.
All right, don't push.
Everybody comfy?
Great. Your gorilla's sitting on my head.
Really, Puddler? You should be polite to our passengers.
Well, Mr. Bensinger, you don't want him to know where we're going, do you?
Certainly not. Let him up.
Okay. But if you don't want him to see...
Don't be crude about it. The civilized way is like this.
Mr. Bensinger reaches back from the front seat and lays the butt of a .38 just back of my ear. I lose interest in most everything at that point and start on a personal inspection tour of several deep-shaft coal mines without benefit of safety light. The next thing I see is a pair of bushy eyebrows, and I figure it's John L. checking up on my union card. By the time I get my eyes propped wider, I discover it's the ape Puddler looking at me. For a while, I think I'm still out because his face is turning from green to red to orange to yellow to blue and back to green. It takes me a minute to figure. Suddenly, I get it. I am in some kind of a loft with a skylight, and the technicolor effect comes from an advertising sign somewhere outside.
He's batting his eyes, Mr. Bensinger.
Give him some water.
Sure, wet pleasure.
Not that way, in a glass.
What are you guys trying to pull?
Should I start with a telephone book?
Not yet, Butler.
The telephone book won't hurt him much. It just kind of pikes him up.
Wait. You are Rocky Fortune?
Yeah. Hey, where's the girl?
In the next room. Fortune, before I let Puddler earn his keep, perhaps you'd like to tell me where it is.
Where what is?
You say, Mr. Bensinger, if you let me start with a telephone book, this wouldn't happen.
Quiet. Your employer saw fit to resist our simple questions.
You knocked him off.
Unfortunately, Puddler's reflexes are quicker than his intellect.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's up to you to tell us where it is.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I can start with a Staten Island book, Mr. Bensinger. That's real pen.
Please.
Point damn boy.
At the proper moment, Puddler, you may use the Manhattan Red Book. Fortune, your time is running out, and I am running out of patience.
Why don't you just give up?
Bates would have an assistant who didn't know.
Bates didn't tell me anything. He didn't even trust me with his two-bit statues. You should have heard him holler when I broke the arm of an old plaster bag. You'd have thought it was made out of gold. You guys are making a big mistake if you think he told me anything.
It's not yours, Mr. Bensinger. This crumb won't talk. Why don't you love
me? On the contrary, Puddler, I think he has talked.
I have?
He has?
Puddler, you will escort Mr. Fortune somewhere into the country and lose him permanently.
A pleasure.
Unfortunately, I will not be able to accompany you in the car. I'm sure Mr. Fortune would give his word of honor not to make any trouble.
Oh, yeah, sure. Cross my heart and hope to die.
Yes, I wouldn't be at all surprised, but just to make sure, Puddler.
Yes, Mr. Bensinger?
The Brooklyn book?
Right. Ooh!
I am back in the coal mine again, and I'm beginning to figure I should have portal-to-portal pay. This time, the first thing I notice is a delicate aroma. It is vaguely familiar, and then I place it. The last time I go down to the track at Monmouth Park, when the train comes out of the tunnel on the Jersey side, a sudden essence arrives simultaneously with the sunlight. I discover that this is the place where all good pigs go to die. Secaucus, New Jersey. Well, this is where I am again. I bat one eye and find I'm driving along with Puddler. He's got one hand on a portable howitzer and the other on the wheel. So I play possum. When the car stops, Puddler gets out on his side and comes around the back to get me. Only when he gets there, I'm gone.
Hey, 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 yo!
So long, sucker. He pumps a couple of quick shots after me, but outside of one lucky hit on the rear window, I'm home free. I head into town and stop on this side of the George Washington Bridge to put in the call of my old friend Sergeant Finger of Homicide.
Fortune, where are you?
Never mind, listen. You want the guy who rubbed out the odd dealer Bates?
You're darn right I do. Fortune, if you...
They put the snatch on me, two thugs. A guy named Benzinger and a Neanderthal man named Puddler.
What are you raving about?
You gotta find him, they got a girl.
How nice for them. Look, Fortune, why don't you make it easy for all of us? Turn yourself in to the nearest precinct.
Finger, you gotta believe me. Don't you want the guy that knocked off Bates?
You bet I do. Turn yourself in, Fortune. I'll let you take a manslaughter plea.
I haven't got time to talk to you, knucklehead.
Wait a minute, Fortune. Don't go away, man. Let's talk this thing over. How have you been? What else is new?
There's Sergeant Finger for you, thinking all the time. Gonna trace the call. Bye now. I drive into town and get stuck in a traffic jam on 10th Avenue. While I'm sitting between two 20-ton trucks, both of them dumping carbon monoxide down my throat, I keep thinking of that blonde, kind of fragile, like she was made of spun glass, but real spun. And then I remember, Puddler with his face changing colors like a chameleon. A bell rings and a little electric light bulb lights up upon my head. I head down 10th Avenue to the offices and workshop of the Mammoth Spectacular Company. Down in the shop working with a blowtorch, I find old Charlie Svoboda.
Rocky, I ain't seen you since you was fired for misspelling a word in that beer sign on 42nd Street.
How's the old glass blower? They still call you on every sign north of Trenton?
Sure, sure. Who could make a spectacular without old Charlie?
And Mama still makes all the big signs, huh?
Well, we got a little competition, but they don't make nothing more than signs on powder room doors.
That's what I figured. Charlie, I gotta find a special sign.
What sign?
All I know is the colors. Green, red, orange, yellow, blue, green.
Uh-huh. Which is longest?
The yellow. The green was the shortest.
Yeah, yeah. I'll check it in the records for you, but I think I know the one.
Yeah? What one?
It's a beautiful sign. Six-cycle animation. I worked on it only last year.
Where is it?
A Bensonhurst in Brooklyn. Arf-arf dog food. Let arf-arf suit your food.
Charlie looks it up and gives me the address. I put 10 gallons of gas in Mr. Benzinger's car, which I think is very nice of me under the circumstances, and head out to Bensonhurst. There's a sign with two dogs chasing each other around in circles. I take a line of sight from the sign to find two possible skylight windows. I climb up the stairs of the first loft and boil in.
Ah!
It turns out to be an artist who was painting a replacement for September Morn. His model takes a dim view of my intrusion, so I get out in a hurry. The second loft, I figure, has got to be it. I go up the stairs real quiet. The door at the top is ajar, and I ease my way into the room without squeaking the hinge. Room is empty. I go across to the other door, grab hold of the doorknob, and yank. Sharon, are you all right?
Oh, Rocky.
The door was open. Why don't you get away?
I was tired. I just got loose. When I heard you, I thought it was those men coming back.
No, I left Puddler with the pigs, but he could have gotten back by now. We better get out of here.
I'm so glad to see you.
Yeah. Come on. Wait a minute. Listen. Here they come.
What do we do?
Now look, they don't know I'm up here. Come on over here behind the door.
What are you going to do?
I brought a tire jack up from the car. We'll knock him off like ducks in a shooting gallery when he comes through the door.
Shh. Careful, Puddler. Don't drop it.
Looks like Puddler hits himself a ride back from Jersey. Here they come now. Ready? One, two,
Drop the wrench, Rocky.
What the? Grab him, Butler.
Don't bother. I have him covered. One move, Fortune. I'll blow a disc out of your spine.
Lady, please do me a favor and shoot. I came back to rescue you.
Well, that was very sweet of you. Did you get it, Benzinger?
Yes, miss. Butler, bring in the statue.
The arm is off. But I didn't do it.
Well, what do you know? The old bat from the art store. What do you want with that statue?
Never mind.
I told you we'd get it for you, miss.
You've done brilliantly, haven't you? First you shoot Bates, and this imbecile lets Fortune get away from him. Come on, pick up the statue, and we'll all go in the car.
How about Fortune? Couldn't I just...
He comes with us till it's over. Let's go.
Lady, if we're going in the car again, may I make one request?
What is it?
Let's not go Pullman this time. I'd like to sit up all the way. We are a happy crew in the car. Benzinger, Puddler, Sharon, the plaster statue, and little old curly-headed me. We head north on the East Side Drive over the bridge of the parkway into Westchester. When we roll through an iron-grilled gate with a big sign on it saying Spruill, I begin to get the idea.
Benzinger, you come in with me and bring the statue. Remember, you tell the blind old fool you were Bates' assistant. Puddler?
Yeah?
Keep the motor running, and when we get the payoff, we've got to get out fast. Come on.
After you, miss.
And keep Fortune sitting tight.
The light, as they say, begins to dawn. Whatever it was that Bates was trying to sell to Spruill, Sharon hijacked and cut herself in.
Set Stella on it. They should have let me use the phone book.
You know that some people use the phone book to look up numbers?
They do? Never thought of that.
You never thought of a lot of things. Like, for instance, this car's got an automatic shift.
Yeah, so what?
Well, you ought to have it neutral, not in drive like you got it.
Listen, wise guy, you trying to tell me how to drive a getaway car? You got to be ready to start on an instant's notice.
Like this?
Hey, get your foot off.
Give me that gun.
Look out, the car. You got my foot jammed on.
Yeah, it's a great pickup this model's got, huh?
Going right into that house. Look out.
We go through the French doors like a knife through cheese and end up on the opposite wall of the living room with Benzinger pinned between the bumper and the brick fireplace. Puddler slightly out of commission, having stuck his head through the windshield. I pile out of the car with Puddler's gun. Sharon's knocked head over tea kettle, out like a light but still breathing very pretty.
What is this? What happened?
Pardon me, Mr. Spruill. Is this the Sawmill River Parkway?
What is the meaning of this? I'll call the police.
I think it's a great idea. And when they get here, we'll hand them that statue you're cutting.
Oh, no. It's mine. I paid for it.
Lots of people paid for it. Bates, for one.
Why, what are you talking about? I just paid this man $50,000. He's Bates' assistant.
He's Bates' murderer.
Murderer?
Why did you pay 50 grand for this plaster statue?
Why, it's not a plaster statue. It's what's underneath. Look, I'll show you. There. There, do you see? There it is. Aphrodite, the goddess of love, carved by Praxiteles himself. Oh, it's beautiful, beautiful.
You had Bates steal it for you, cover it over with that cheap plaster statue to hide.
Oh, you think I care? Now it's mine, all mine.
And I hope the two of you are very happy. Maybe she'll write you letters.
Letters? What are you talking about?
You're going to the can, old-timer. You're an accessory before, after, and during a murder.
She's beautiful. Beautiful.
And that reminds me, Sharon. Sharon, baby. Can you hear me, honey?
What? What is it?
I got something important to ask you.
What?
Where does Puddler keep his Westchester book? I want to call the cops.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast were Jan Miner, Ted Osborne, Leon Janney, Joseph Julian, Ed Begley, and Mandel Kramer. Tonight's script was written by Ernest Canoy. Fred Wade directed. Now to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
Ever see a magician pull the disappearing act on somebody? I always wondered how they did it, and then finally I found out. A carnival guy pulled a disappearing act on me. The only trouble was he was trying to make me disappear for keeps. I'll tell you about it next week. See you around.
This program was transcribed. This is the NBC Radio Network.
Thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.